Hi guys, welcome to the Danimal's Cage. I'm your host, the Mighty Danimal, Dan Martins. On today's show, I am happy to be joined by Mike and Jared from One in the Chamber. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great.
Yeah, good, man.
Thanks for
good
having man, us, yeah. Dan.
Awesome. I'm happy you guys were able to take some time and hang out with me on this beautiful Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So we'll start kind of at the beginning with One in the Chamber. So the first question, of course, I ask everybody is just kind of how their band or I guess just kind of how their music thing kind of started out. So how did One in the Chamber begin and how did the current lineup kind of come to be and how have you guys kind of progressed to where you are now?
It started in jazz school.
Yeah.
I don't actually know how Cecil met you. So why don't you?
Okay. So Cecil, our guitar player, and I both go to York or both went to York University.
Okay.
And I was involved in a club there that we had a mutual friend in. And he was putting on a show for another club at York. And I decided to put a band together and play at the show. It was for charity. And Cecil also happened to play at the show. And we saw each other basically play on stage, and we had met each other a few times before because of this mutual friend, so we were familiar with each other. But after that night, we were like, dude, you know what, we're both looking to start a band. And that's how we got together. And then Cecil basically went on a hunt for a drummer and a bassist, and I will let Jared continue that part of the story.
So I was also at York at the time. Cecil and I were both in the jazz program, you know, he was a few years ahead of me, so I didn't actually know him. And I was performing at the Absinthe at York that for a jazz showcase. I was filling in for a friend, actually, and it was like easily the worst show I've ever played. It was
really
awful.
Oh, it really was that bad.
So it was awful, and I wasn't prepared, and the band did not prepare me well, and it, you know, there was no practices. And you know, I worked the next morning, so I left. And my friend who was in that band was like, hey, the bartender wants to talk to you. I'm going to give him your phone number. And, you know, he gives me a call a couple weeks later. And he's like, hey, man, I want to start a rock band and I have a singer. And I was like, oh, really? You know, I was like, it was the worst show ever. And it turned into like this fantastic opportunity. So then from there, the three of us started jamming a little bit and practicing and writing. And Cecil already knew Chris because the two of them had gone to high school. So after a while of bass players not showing up to meet with us and things like that, he was talking to Chris's brother Matthew, and you know, Chris kind of came in that way. And since then, it's been the four of us.
Yeah, that's awesome. So do you guys remember the first show you guys played as One in the Chamber, and how did it go?
Must have been the Valley.
It was
show,
the
right?
Valley, yeah. It was yeah. A bar in Mississauga that Cecil was a cook at.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So he got us in with his boss, and we played. We set up a little stage in the corner.
Nice.
And we had quite a few people there.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Most of them were friends and family, but yeah, for the most part, I think it went pretty well.
Yeah, it was fun.
We did a few covers, and then we debuted a couple of originals. But yeah, it was a good first show.
That's awesome. What covers did you guys play? Do you remember?
We definitely played Slither.
Yeah, we played Slither for sure.
Nice.
We probably played Are You Gonna Be My Girl.
We probably did that.
We probably played
what,
that.
That's what every
that
band plays on their first.
Yeah. What else did we do?
I don't think we did any of the Beatles stuff. Or
no, that was way before the Beatles. You know what I think also we did was that one that Cecil always sings.
Say It Ain't So.
Say It Ain't So.
Yes. Yeah,
we played
we did
Say
that
It Ain't
one.
So.
Yeah.
Nice, nice. Yeah. Well, do you guys still cover any of those on like a regular basis or
just Slither?
Slither still lives every once in a while in the set list.
Slither is still slithering on, eh?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's so funny because when I listen to you guys, I do get like the Velvet Revolver kind of STP kind of vibe from you guys. Is Scott Weiland a big influence for you, Mike?
Oh, thanks, man. I gotta be honest. Jared is one of the biggest Stone Temple Pilots fans in the band.
Nice.
In terms of being a Scott Weiland fan, we got a story about playing at his last show ever.
Oh, really?
Adelaide Hall in Toronto. We were on the bill.
You guys were on the bill? Oh my God, no way.
You were on the bill for that show. Yeah, what was the date of that?
Like December 1st, 2015. It was like 5 years ago, like a week ago.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
We got to meet him and we got to meet the rest of the band and we got some autographs after the show. And then a couple of days later.
Like 2 days later, he passed.
And since then, you know, I've kind of dived myself into the whole STP, and especially because I've always been a big Velvet Revolver fan. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've always loved him from that side of him, but I've never really listened to a lot of 90s grunge stuff.
Yeah.
You know, coming from a Guns N' Roses love is what drove me to Velvet Revolver. But after that, I kind of dove into the Scott Weiland catalog and even the Wildabouts. They had a great album before unfortunately broke up.
Oh yeah, I love that Wildabouts album. And I was actually considering going to the to Scott Weiland's final show. And it's so crazy that Toronto was his final show.
It is. It is absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's a little, I guess, little known Toronto fact, I guess. It's not talked about.
No, but it will in Toronto lore.
it's funny because I did Canadian Music Week, or I volunteered there a year ago, and I was doing some stage management work at Adelaide Hall, and I was talking with the booker there, and I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but he was telling me that it's like Adelaide Hall is best known as like, this was the place Scott Weiland did his final show ever. And I'm like, whoa.
And you know what? Interesting enough, the show was supposed to be at the Hard Rock Cafe.
Yeah.
Oh, so really?
They had sold a bunch of tickets for the Hard Rock Cafe, and I can't remember if they had sold too many tickets and the venue was too small, or if the venue had double booked, but for some reason it got rebooked to Adelaide Hall, and now Adelaide Hall has this claim to fame.
That's incredible. So now I kind of want to talk a little bit about the new single, To the Gallows, and it's such a good song, guys. Like, and now, when I interview a lot of the bands, like, I'm just always like pumping everyone's tires, being like, it's a great song. Yeah. I'm just a music aficionado. Like, I'm such an enthusiast. Like, I will always listen to new music. So what I'd love to ask with a lot of people, if they have a new single out, what was the creative process like behind that one? Was that a song that you guys had for a while and you were just working on it for a long time, or did it come like very spontaneously? How did it kind of come to be?
It was very spontaneous.
Yeah, like I think most of our, well, my favorite songs, we kind of just were there, and Cecil had this new pedal he was playing around with, and you'll know, like in the beginning of To the Gallows, you got that wah 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 where the guitar grows, and he started playing that just creepy riff, and I just started this scream into the microphone, and then the lyrics just flowed, and it was like, you know, that's just how a lot of our great songs happen.
I think I have to agree with Mike. I think our, at least again, my favorite songs that we do, I think they came together very quickly and very, you know, spontaneously, and very much like, you know, like someone would play something and we would all immediately want to play that. And, you know, no matter what we were doing, if we were supposed to be practicing a set or whatever, like the focus was, no, we got to like jump on that.
Yeah. Keep playing.
Like, we got to get that and get it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the thing that I love the most. Like when I was in a band, like my guitar player, my bass player would start like playing something, and then I just kind of like build on that, and it, everyone else would be like, oh, that's cool. And then next thing you know, we have a song within like an hour.
Yeah, exactly. That's how the best ones come around.
Those are the coolest parts of that. Now, we also talked about before we started recording, you guys were in Rock Search, which is a very well-known radio competition that has given us like The Trues, The Glorious Sons, Finger 11. Mm-hmm. How did you guys end up getting involved in that competition, and how did you guys finish?
Jared is sort of our band mastermind. I mean, I show up, I play music, and that's pretty much my job, but Jared takes care of almost everything for the band.
I used to settle with being called band manager, but from now on I'll take the title Band Mastermind.
Band Mastermind. As of now, that absolutely.
Was, that I been, love that.
The Ringmaster.
That has yes. been gifted, and I will, yeah, I will treasure that one forever.
Yeah, you've That's heard awesome. It here first on the Dan Wolf podcast. Yeah.
So, you know, Rock Search obviously is that, it's that competition that everyone wants to be in and everyone, you know, looks to. And it's one of the competitions that's remained, it's kept its integrity this entire time. And they, you know, when a band wins Rock Search, you're never like, how did they win? A band won Rock Search. And you're like, yeah, that's a great band.
Yeah.
So, you know, since we started the band, that was always a goal of ours, obviously being, from Toronto, that sort of Southern Ontario pocket. For us, it was a goal. And, you know, when we first started off, like, we didn't have the recordings or anything like that to get in there. And then, you know, we made some demos and we submitted those.
Yeah.
And obviously they're looking for radio quality. So it was kind of like a shot in the dark. And, you know, after our first EP came out, again, we submitted some work from there. And we didn't quite make the cut then either. And it was kind of like, okay, all right. And this year we released our first brand new single since 2018, Blow. And that was kind of the lead thing that we sent to them along with some of the older stuff. And, you know, for us getting for me getting the email that we made the top 16 was like, okay, this is four years. Yeah, this is 4 years of work that we've put into as, you know, as a band and playing shows and developing and working on our craft and our art. And for us, that was like a moment that was like, okay, this is like significant recognition. And like, you know, we were beyond excited to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And you guys were also in with bands that I know very well, like Dirty Rick, Cigar Club, and Cudbear.
Great bands. Yes. Absolutely great bands.
It's, you know, it's like I said, it's always a great lineup.
And you know what? It's great to feel like we could be mentioned in with all of these other great bands from the Toronto area.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It feels really cool to be included in that.
Well, that's what I love about Toronto, especially. Like, we've got a really great music scene just on all kind of ends of things. Like, the Toronto music scene, of course, is one thing. But then I live in Aurora, so I'm like next to Newmarket, and we have a really kind of like thriving kind of renaissance going on with our music scene right now.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Have you guys played up in Newmarket before or
not
we
yet?
Were,
but we
were supposed
happen,
to
yeah.
before COVID. I was talking to Ryan from Agoria Productions and
my former bandmate.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, you gotta hook us up then.
he prints our shirts actually, and we just did a line of hoodies through him. But we were talking to him about booking the Grey Goats, and that was gonna be part of like the spring lineup of shows. After the release of Blow, and I think we were kind of sorting it out, and then things happened.
Yeah, some stuff went like the whole COVID thing. Really, it messed up a lot of people. Like, I know a lot of people were supposed to play shows, and a lot of people probably had like studio time booked that was just kind of off the table.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys have any of that? Like, I know you guys had some shows kind of, I guess, planned. Did you guys have any studio time on the table as well?
Well, we were lucky. We kind of got all of our, well, not all of our recording, but we got all of our recording for this period done before COVID happened. It disrupted a few things in terms of live shows, and it definitely disrupted release dates of things and filming of other things. But we've kind of adapted. And like I said, Jared is a mastermind. So we put together different things. We did a few playthrough videos earlier in the summer for our single Blow. And we've been keeping busy. We filmed the To the Gallows music video. And
I mean, it was really when it, like Mike said, we recorded in January, February, and we actually filmed the music video for Blow, I guess like a month before everything shut down.
Was it early March?
It was, no, because it came out in March. Maybe early March, late February. So we filmed it like a month before everything shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for us, like, we had a single release show booked at Sneaky D's.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Oh, wow.
That was cut, and we were really looking forward to that. It was actually going to be our first time performing at Sneaky D's. But for us, you know, the single was supposed to be released in late March, and the music video followed a week later. So that stayed on track. And like, it was, we were in a really fortunate position because we were able to ride this wave of the single blow for, you know, a really long time. Whereas, you know, like a lot of bands that, you know, we love and respect, you know, they were kind of scrambling like, okay, what do we do during this time?
Nice. Now, you guys talked a little bit about, like the Scott Weiland playing at Adelaide Hall show. Do you guys have any other career highlights? Because I know you guys have only been a band for, I think, like 5 years now, you said. So have you guys gotten to like open for any other really cool acts, or have you guys done anything like really cool?
One of my favorites is still playing at the MGM Grand.
nice.
Yes. Yeah.
So we were in Vegas on a trip, and we were super drunk one night at a bar in the MGM Grand, and they had a house band on stage who took a break. And again, Jared, being the mastermind he is, walked up to them and said, "Hey guys, while you're taking a break, do you mind if we play a few songs?" And
they told us we could play one song.
And we strung and it into
one. We played the one, and then the guy was like, "Okay, you can play another."
Okay, yeah, that's what happened. Yeah,
I like to think we earned that second.
Yeah, so we played two songs, and that was a cool experience playing.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
I don't know. I mean, to me, I'm such a Scott Weiland fan. That show to me always rings as like a big highlight. I actually got a tattoo to kind of memorialize him and just celebrate that experience, but. I mean, it's so tough to say.
We have opened for some cool people, but definitely no one as sort of inspiring, I would say, as Scott Weiland.
Fair enough. Like, that's, if I got asked to open for Scott Weiland, like, I would probably, like, I'd lose it. Like,
it's crazy. And you know what? It happened so early on, I would say, too, in us being a band.
We probably hadn't even played 10 shows by that point.
Yeah, we were still very green. And,
super green.
But yeah, that was one of the coolest moments. We played the Opera House, which is also really cool experience.
My favorite venue to play has always been the Hideout. You know, it was hard to hear about their closing, but we started playing at the Bovine in the last few years, and that one's always
that's a great show.
Bovine Indie Week 2019 opening for The Wild sold out. That show was a cool show. Fantastic. That was a blast.
Nice. Yeah, it's just been really hard hearing about like all the venues that are shutting down. I think the biggest one, and I think like I'm still really like seething in envy about this, is the Mod Club.
Sucks, man.
Yeah, because I did some stuff for Canadian Music Week at the Mod Club a while ago as well, like last year as well.
Yeah, it's awful. And we were supposed to have like Elma Combo doing some great things, just opening up this year too. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, it's delayed them coming back with a big splash.
I mean, they've done the online streams.
Yeah, a lot of people are doing like the online live streams. Have you guys done anything like that?
Yeah, two weeks ago, we were on Mississauga Music's Saga Music Now.
Oh, nice.
And that was really cool. We played a few songs, including To the Gallows. Nice. And it was professionally recorded and shot and turned out really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a really good show.
Yeah, I know a few people. Like, I know the guys who run Mississauga Music. Demetrius comes to mind right away. Demetrius Nath.
Oh, sorry. No, this one was through the Mississauga Arts Council.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We made that mistake earlier.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, okay. Demetrius did mention the Mississauga Arts Council to me a couple of times, but either way, So you guys are in Mississauga?
I live in Richmond Hill, and Jared, Mark, but the other two, Cecily and Christian, live in Mississauga.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Mike, you're literally down the road from me. I'm in Aurora, like just up Yonge Street.
Oh, there you go. I'm on Yonge myself. So there we
go. Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm just off Yonge Street. So I'm up by Orchard Heights. Cat's out of the bag.
Yeah.
Cat's out of the bag on recording. So if there you guys want to send me some fan mail.
Absolutely, yeah. There you go.
Awesome. Now, I like to conclude all these interviews with just kind of like some questions to kind of get to know you guys a little bit. We're just kind of like fun, open-ended questions. And since there's two of you, it kind of gives for a little bit of variety of answers. So Let's begin the lightning round of Danimals Fun Time. That can sound weird depending on how you interpret it. For question number one, do you guys have any musical guilty pleasures? Is there something that if I look at your, I guess, personal music accounts, like on Spotify or Apple Music, is there something that I would be really surprised to find out you listen to?
Shania Twain.
I don't know. Is that a guilty pleasure?
Oh, I'm not guilty about it, but it's shocking.
Shania Twain's awesome. Like, I'd be lying if I said I still don't listen to, like, Man, I Feel Like a Woman. Mm-hmm. That don't impress me much.
Of course, yeah.
That's awesome.
For myself, I mean, I don't know if it's surprising or not, but right now I think my top 10 songs for the 2020 wrap-up were all from the Hamilton soundtrack.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It was a great musical. I don't know.
I haven't seen it.
No, we only watched it. Well, we watched it during COVID, so yep. The whole soundtrack stuck in my mind. So
yeah.
I think I've listened to that soundtrack so many times then that it stuck for the rest of 2020 as my most played.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I was really fortunate because I got to see Hamilton in Toronto literally the weekend before everything shut down.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, it was a cool experience, but like my sister got to see it on Broadway a couple of years ago when it first opened. So I still kind of hold that one over her head, but she got to see like the original production and we just got to see like the Canadian knockoff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still the same music, but you can kind of tell when it's done by different people, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, keeping kind of in touch with your music, do you guys have a favorite or a least favorite song that you guys have done?
I mean, To the Gallows is probably one of my favorites, I would say.
Yeah, I'd say... Of the new stuff, To the Gallows has kind of become my favorite.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite to play, too.
I'd still say Blow.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, I always go back to Crooked Step on the last EP. That one is one of my favorites to play.
Yeah, that one's still one of my favorites, too. But, I don't know, least favorite would probably be one of our really older songs,
yeah,
I guess.
The ones we don't play anymore.
Yeah, we don't play any of the least favorite ones anymore,
yeah.
So...
Yeah, I find that tends to be when I ask this question, that tends to be the answer for a lot of bands, just because like you don't play like a lot of the material that you had when you started out. Like I remember when I was, because I played in church on Sunday with Ryan from Agoria for a couple of years. A lot of the near the end of my tenure, like a lot of the songs that we started with, we ended up not playing anymore. Like we just kind of retired them. We didn't really like retire them like ceremoniously or anything. We just kind of came to the decision. It's like these songs really don't kind of shape what we're going for anymore. So let's just kind of like can them.
Yeah, yeah, it's hard to fit like all the old songs into a 30 or 40 minute
set.
And
I mean, you want to impress people the absolute most, and you have such a small window and you want to avoid something that doesn't impress them. And you know, I think most bands will agree, when you first start writing music, you're in such a scramble to get songs to fill up a 30-minute set.
Yeah.
Because you want to hit the stage and you wanna bring this music out there that you know, you kind of the standards are a little lower for yourself, and then after a while, you know, you all become better songwriters.
I was gonna say, I wouldn't say so much impress, but I think it shows more who we are now.
Okay,
when we play the more recent songs.
That's a better way of putting it.
That being said, though, we didn't do it this year, but every year we do a sort of friends and family show.
Oh, yeah.
And we always bring back pretty much every song we've ever written and a lot of the old covers, so they stay fresh. One time we had to play a spontaneous two and a half hour show.
Yes.
And we had to stretch that one out.
Yeah, so, that one was, it was dust off. All the covers,
all the old originals. So that, you know, keeps us on our toes. Yeah. Plus, we'll bust out an old one for a sound check every now and then.
Nice. Do you guys do like, because you know how the Foo Fighters do like a lot of those, like in songs, they do kind of like the extended like jams, like instrumental, like solos and all that. Do you guys do anything like that?
We used to have solos that we wrote into our set. There was a little while we had a drum solo and we'd have a bass solo and a guitar solo. We did that a lot for our release shows. But more recently, when we've been doing our shows, we don't really extend the songs any more than they do. We do little, I'd say maybe additions to sort of lead into another song, yeah, but we don't really extend stuff as much anymore.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough, guys. So the next question that I ask, do you guys deal with like performance anxiety? And if so, like, how do you guys cope with it?
I'm anxious to get back on stage.
That's a good answer. Good answer.
You know what? I'd say the same. Like, as soon as I'm not performing, I'm always wanting to get back on stage. But the morning of and even leading up to a show, there's a lot of, oh, you know what? I don't know if I really want to go. But
yeah.
It passes. And then, you know, right before the show, it's like, okay, have a beer. We're waiting to go on stage. You know, there's a lot of anticipation. And then once you get on stage, it's like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be.
I think performance anxiety is very different when you're a singer, a guitar player at the front of the stage, and when you're a drummer behind everyone and behind your drums. And,
yeah.
You know, it's much easier to not be anxious about all these people watching you or messing up, because no one's going to see you anyways.
Yeah, that's great.
Exactly. And like Jared, I totally understand that, because you've seen you've probably seen like my Facebook, like I'm a drummer myself. So
yeah.
So I
it's a lot easier to shrug it off when you're behind everyone and everything.
Yeah. Exactly. And the thing about me is that, like, because I totally get that, because, like, on the day of a show, now, I've kind of had the misfortune sometimes of having to work right before a show. Like, I'd work maybe, like, 10 in the morning to, like, 5 at night, and then I'd have to, like, drive, like, usually an hour or 2 hours to get to where I'm going for the show that night. Before I leave for work every morning, of a show, I have to make sure like my drums are in the car ready to go. And then if I have like usually I would spend my break just like tuning everything, making sure everything still sounds good. I'm sure my bosses probably were looking at me like, what the fuck is he doing? Yeah. So the next question is, do you guys, now what is the funniest thing that's happened at a show that you guys have done?
The funniest thing we've done,
like, or that you've seen.
The only thing that comes to mind, and it comes so like immediately, is we played the Fox in Barrie.
Oh, nice.
I think this is our second time in Barrie, and this guy started doing push-ups
off the stage
that we played.
Yeah, that guy was
weird. Yeah, he just like he leaned forward, he's standing on the ground, and he leaned forward and put his arms on the edge of the stage and like started doing push-ups while the bands were playing. Yeah, and I've yet to see that happen again.
There was a show we were at when we were playing, it was part of, what was that series that the Hideout always did?
Oh, The Bout.
The Bout.
Yeah.
So they did this series of shows. It was like a battle of the bands over several weeks, and I went to one of the Bout shows, and this band went on, and this singer went on fully dressed and with this big coat and everything, and progressively throughout his set he just took more and more of his clothes off until he was wearing nothing but this banana hammock. And that's how he ended his set. He wasn't even wearing socks by the end of it.
Oh boy. You know what?
Hammock and no socks.
And no socks. So,
oh my God.
That was probably one of the weirdest shows I was at.
Yeah. He was just like wearing a jacket, and then he just kept like stripping, and then he's wearing this like Borat style banana hammock.
Well, he had the jacket, he had a shirt on, he had pants, he had shoes, he had everything. And then just throughout his, I guess, 20 minute set, he just kept taking more and more of his clothes
until
he was just wearing his underwear, and that was it. Yeah.
That is fucking awesome.
Yeah, you know, he definitely, I think,
good for him,
left an image in the judge's mind. Yeah, absolutely.
I did an interview a while ago, and we were, the girl that I was interviewing, we were talking about like people who wear like banana costume. It's funny you mentioned banana. Like, yeah, people dressed in like banana costumes.
Yeah.
Those are the coolest people. I saw Pup at Echo Beach, and I saw some guy in a banana suit, like on an inflatable raft, just crowd surfing.
Cool, man. Cool.
That was such a cool time. All right, guys. So the last question I have for you guys is, what is the best advice that you've been given and that you could pass on to anybody just listening to his podcast?
I don't know. Who's given us advice?
Scott's given us some advice.
Scott's given us some advice. Scott's,
yeah. I don't remember.
I don't know. No. You know what? I don't want to sound like a dick. I guess I'll just give advice. But
yeah,
think of advice we've been given.
I mean, Scott was always big on these are your songs and
not this Scott is Weiland, Scott.
No different Scott. We worked with a Scott for our demo album.
We did not
album.
Get advice from Scott.
Yeah. This Scott, basically, he was always telling us that these are our songs and our vision, and to, you know, no matter what people told us about having to change our music to fit a certain crowd or image, he was always very much stick to your songs and stick to what makes you guys you. And I think we've always kept that.
I think that's, you know, been important for us
in a lot of our songwriting, yeah. For sure. We've always, all four of us come from very different musical backgrounds.
Yeah.
So I think that's very evident through a lot of our songwriting, how different all of our songs are. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I think is stuck to us, and that I would say if you're starting a band, is always make sure that you're doing it for the love of the music more than anything else.
Exactly.
I think you could always hear a band when they are doing it for other reasons, and I think it comes across as less interesting, less engaging.
And I think one thing that I struggled with was always like, as the lead singer, what am I supposed to wear on stage? What am I supposed to look?
Yep.
It took a long time to really get into, an image that I'm cool with, and this is what I'm trying to say with our music.
I think it took us all a long time to get
a
consistent image.
Going. Yeah, but at the same time, you know, when you're first starting out, you should really be focusing on the music more than anything anyways. And that once you understand your music and the sound that you're trying to express, you know, you see somebody else wearing something and then you add it to your wardrobe and, you know, that stuff comes along. But I think focusing on the music is really important and, you know, something to
see. My go-to advice when people ask questions is like the opposite. I'm like, focus on the business side. But I mean,
that's the mastermind as compared to the artist.
Yeah,
I guess.
I would 100% say like Mike is 100% correct, because like good music is ultimately what sells you.
Yeah.
But, you know, for us, it was a matter of like learning how to properly book shows. It was a matter of learning how to, you know, write a press kit and send it out to people. And
stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I would, my advice to bands that are doing it independently is, you can't be afraid to get your feet wet, and, you gotta take the shot, and you gotta put in the work.
Absolutely. You have to be good.
Yeah, that too.
You know, you have
back to focusing on the music. You gotta be good.
You gotta wanna play your guitar and your drums and sing and play the bass and play the keyboards or play the violin, whatever you're playing and showing, you gotta be the best at it. Yeah. So it's never a stopped process. It's always continuing.
You're always learning, always working, and you know, always giving it your best.
Yeah,
exactly. There's a good quote that I always live by: always a student, never a master. You're always learning something.
There you go. I like that.
Because if you live to be 100 and you already like, there's still, even when you get to 100, I'm sure there's still stuff you wish you learned, right?
Yeah. Like Tom Morello said, the guitar is a fairly new instrument.
Yeah.
It's always new ideas and new things to be learned from it.
I think there was a quote from Barack Obama that's like, music and creative energy is always inexhaustible. Like, people will always find something new to create. And I think that's really gratifying to hear, because like, I always look at music as kind of like, music is like the heartbeat of life. Like, you hear music and like life just keeps going.
That's it. Yeah. Soundtrack to your soul.
Your days.
Exactly. Awesome, guys. Well, thanks so much for hanging out. Jared, Mike, always a pleasure to chat with you guys. So the very last thing I ask is, where can people find you guys on social media?
Everything, Facebook, Instagram is at OITC Band. We've got the website that uses the same URL, www.oitcband.com. You know, we're on Spotify. You can find our music on Spotify, on YouTube with the music videos, on Apple Music. We're on, you know, we're on all the digital networks as well, on Bandcamp, of course. And
you can buy hard copies of our music on our website too.
Yep.
Do you guys have t-shirts for sale?
We do. Yeah.
T-shirt. Awesome. Just finished a run of limited edition hoodies that we're doing.
Nice. Nice. Well, I will be picking up one of those. All right, guys. This has been the Danimals Cage. I've been Dan Martins. This has been Mike and Jared from One in the Chamber. Check out their new single, To the Gallows, on YouTube, Spotify, literally wherever else you can find music. And we will see you guys next week. Take care.
So I'll drown them in hate. Watch the little ones play on their grave.